Well, folks, there we have it with Roger Miller back describing government again in such eloquent terms. And, you know, God rest his soul as well. What such a brilliant man. But, Neil, if I may, here's my question. If the Constitution established was a criminal conspiracy, how can we take valid any court decision based on a document that was obviously illegal?
No, that's a good question. I just, you know, it's just they've been doing it for so long. It's a custom. It's just custom. I don't see that there's any actual authority. I don't see the true vine. I don't see there actually being any authority for the Constitution.
Well, I tell you what, buddy, let's take some calls here. We've got an old friend, Rex, in Florida. Rex, you want to jump in? You got any questions for Neil or myself?
Yes, I do. I'd like to list a few items, and then I have a question. We got the Bible, the Constitution, a uniform, a title, like a governor, president, mayor. My question is, officer, my question is, what grants one man standing to place his hands upon another man?
Neil, you want to attack that one?
What a great question. You know, I just say natural law. That's what I always default to. You know, you have the right to defend yourself. And I think at its base, I really think that that's the most important thing in the entire Constitution. Of all the rights that are given people, is the right to defend oneself. And, you know, to put your hands on another person, there's nothing there that gives you the right to put your hands on another person except in self-defense. So, you know, you can't take that
away from that.
And Rex, let's not forget that the only amendment which says shall not be infringed is the most infringed document we have under this government, or the most infringed concept, I'm sorry.
Well, even to bear arms doesn't mean is not limited to a pistol. To bear
right.
arms is a stick, a club, a foot, a dog, anything for defense. I agree with that.
Or a tank, or a missile.
But the only standing a man has to place his hands upon another man is defense. So every arrest that's taking place, nearly, you know, unless you're hunting down a murderer and you know you've got the exact thing, the murderer, any officer that ever places his hands upon another man, we're seeing a lot of beatings on YouTube, is a trespass and a wrong and a harm, and they are never ever charged with the trespass and the wrongdoing that they're committing. And that's what's got to end. You can only in defense can I lay my hands upon you.
But Rex, they have implied immunity.
And that's a trespass. That's a fraud and that's a lie.
Because they're working for the government, they can do whatever they want to. That's in effect what implied immunity says. Whatever you do in performance of your job for the government, even conducting a raid on the wrong house and killing someone like happened in Tucson, Arizona, the courts ruled that the people who shot this former Marine 61 times, it wasn't their fault. They were just doing their job. But the taxpayers of the state of Arizona and the county of Pima had to cough up over $4 million, while the people who perpetrated the crime were exonerated. Is that the kind of government that anybody wants?
See, that's the problem we have. There is no ability, and you've said it before, there is no provision in the Constitution, except for treason, to arrest a government employee. And it seems to me that the costumes and the disguises and the titles these people wear are designed by the lawyers to shield themselves from their corruption. And that's what we've got to put into. And thank
Rex,
you.
Yes, thank you, Rex. That was an excellent question. Neil, comments, sir? Uh-oh, you still there?
I did.
Oh, there you are.
Just,
okay. My
sorry.
Bad. Go ahead, sir.
Who, me? No, I'll just, could we get to, like I said, I go back to natural law and just, natural law in the Bible. I think that those things are you can't take those away from somebody, and regardless of whether this Constitution has authority, regardless of whatever government has authority, it's self-defense. And, I've been there. So I studied it, and that's what it's all about. That's what the Constitution is supposed to be all about, is the incorporation of natural law. And, until I met you, Mike, or until I heard your interpretations, I truly believed that that was the intent, and that was what was actually contained in the Constitution.
Well, but Neil, let me I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just say, silly me, I got schooled. I mean, I've seen the light. I mean, you showed me the light. You showed a lot of people the light,
Well... Let's jump to another point that you and I have discussed ad infinitum, I think, was that in the ratification agreements of three states, New York, Rhode Island, and Virginia, they placed their right for secession. And you very eloquently said that you agree, that Rhode Island's was weak in their ratification agreement, but Virginia and New York were dead on. Would you speak to that, please, sir?
Well, the ratification of Virginia and New York basically said, we will do it. We'll ratify, we the people, but we reserve the right to withdraw from this compact or contract when the rights of the people have been disregarded. So there was an attempt to reserve their rights as if it was a contract. As if they were entering into a contract, they'll say, okay, we'll do this, we'll do all this, we'll do all this. But we're not going to do this. And these are our terms of our acceptance. And the fact that they were accepted is sort of an implied acceptance by the other states or that form the compact that, they took it. They accepted it. So Virginia and New York said, if you fail, or at such time as you failed to serve the people of our state, we reserve the right to get out, or we reserve the right to withdraw. And that's a good contract language. That's, I could see from a pure contract standpoint, that the agreement on which New York and Virginia accepted being part of the Constitution, here's our condition, and it was impliedly accepted because they were accepted as into the United States. So there's an implied acceptance of those conditions of secession. Rhode Island, on the other hand, didn't really frame it in terms of this is our condition of acceptance. It's more of an expression. This is what we would like to see. This is what we would like. This is our, this is our ideals that we would like expressed in the Constitution. But it wasn't framed in terms of a condition. This is the condition that we will accept. It just says, we accept, but we hope that you will do that, that you will do this. And that's the distinction I found with the Rhode Island ratification.
Well, when we look at it, though, and then I want to take a couple more callers. When we look at what happened with the acceptance, and then we look at Article 4, Clause 2 of the Constitution, which says all states have the same immunities and privileges, that would mean that they all had the same right to secede. Yet, under the Constitution, with Abraham Lincoln in 1861, he said, if you try to leave, we'll kill you. And here's the point, my point here, and then I want to take these calls to get these people in here to ask you some questions, sir. But here is my point is, if they, why have a contract like the Constitution if the people have no enforcement mechanism?
Well, I think that the courts are supposed to be the enforcement mechanism. There's supposed to be a balance of the balance of powers. That's supposed to be the enforcement mechanism.
But Neil, who appoints them and who pays them? I mean, what if you and I had a contract disagreement and I said, Neil, I don't think you're treating me right here, and you said, okay, well, we'll turn it over to our arbitrator who happens to be my dad. That, in essence, is what we have in this government. If you want to appeal a government's decision, you have to appeal it to a government employee.
Yeah.
That is pure conflict of interest, is it not?
Yep. It's tough. I won't take cases. I do not sue the government. I just won't take those cases.
Well, that's a no-win situation, isn't it? Well, let's jump in here and let our old buddy Steve Keno from out there in Colorado, up there in Archuleta County, which we used to call, Taco County. Steve, how you doing, buddy?
I have a question for your guest.
Please.
We had a civil suit against our county commissioners. During the trial, we caught the county attorney committing fraud on the court. I spoke up right away, and the judge said that he would address the issue at the next court hearing. The next court hearing came, and the judge was going to move forward, and I immediately stood up and objected that he could not move forward until he addressed the charges of fraud upon the court. And we presented all the evidence and everything, and he actually started to fall asleep. And he just shined it on. And it was really frustrating for me, and the time that I've spent in court, and I've seen this happen over and over again, where an attorney will commit fraud upon the court. What good is having a law if the judges won't enforce it? And another question I have for you is, can a litigant request that the attorney I'm having a senior moment. Be put on oath.
I mean, opposing counsel?
Yes.
You have to sue them. But let me address your fraud on the court. I mean, I he's preaching to the choir.
Great subject. Go ahead, Neil.
I can't tell you how many fraud on the courts I have on my computer screen as I was working on, last week. It happens all the time to me. And I don't take it. Most people do. I don't take it. Why? Because I'm from Boston. And it's just the way we were brought up around here. You don't take it. I mean, Bob, the big bad Bruins, I'm sorry. This is the way I grew up. I was at the game where Bobby Orr scored that overtime goal, and he's flying through the air. You don't let that happen. And when I have a client whose life is on the line. You just can't let it happen, and they do it all the time, and they'll lie straight face to the judge. And you know what? The biggest problem, I was telling Mike the other day, I have a really good record. I win most of my cases because the people on the other side are just you know, they're not nice people, and the courts really have no great love for them either. So they'll decide. So they'll act fairly. The exception is when there's an attorney involved, and when you're going up against an attorney, at that point, they completely, you know, they protect the attorney no matter what kind of piece of garbage that attorney is and what they've done in front of that judge. It's just incredible. They hate it. But what I would suggest to you is, you know, if you have a, if you get a transfer.
The case is all over. The case is all over. We took it to the appellate court, and the appellate court held it up. It was just our rights to put initiatives on the ballot.
Well, technically, if there's fraud on the court, there's no statute of limitations. So even whether there's been an appellate decision or not, there is no statute of limitations. Fraud on the court means that there was no fair fight. It was cheating. It was like, you know, it was like a fixed game in baseball or something. There is no statute of limitations. If you get a transcript of the hearing, if you can identify where this guy lied straight face to the court, there you can go back and you can ask to vacate the judgment. You can ask to reopen the situation. Now, you know, whatever might have happened at the appeals court, whatever the commissioner's actions, whatever actions they've taken so far, you know, maybe you can't undo it, but boy, you can certainly ruin their day and their week. If you file them, if you can get them on the record and, you know, put it before them, look at, you know, it sounds like you know what you're talking about. When you say the word fraud on the court, it's a very, very specialized area of the law, but you seem to know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and we had all the evidence from the court transcripts that he had committed fraud upon the court, and I've come to the conclusion now because I've seen it happen so many times in different court cases that the judges are there to protect the civil servants. They're not there for the people. They're there to protect the civil servants.
Well, in your case, yeah. I mean, definitely. I don't have experience going up against a government entity. My adversaries are private, but my adversaries are also the attorneys on the other side, and they get protected. They are so protected by the judges. And, you know, like I said, but I identify what they do, and I do my best just to try to hold them accountable. Sometimes I'm successful, most of the time not, holding the attorney successful.
It's a big club.
I mean, holding the attorneys accountable.
It's a big club, and we're not in it. And it's called, you know, I wrote an article years ago called The Constitution of 1787, of the lawyers, by the lawyers, and for the lawyers. The lawyers are always going to protect each other, whether they're sitting on a bench or whether they're in attendance at the court. That is a known fact. It should be to everyone. The government defends itself. To hell with the people. That has been the earmark for so many years. I mean, 234 years. We've got examples of it beginning with days after the new government began under the Constitution. But, you know, we've got Steve, a great call. Let me jump now to Sherry in Kansas, and let's see what Sherry has to say. Sherry? You still with us, Sherry? Uh-oh, sounds like music.
There we go. Okay, Mike. Hello, Mike. Hello, Neil. Oh,
hey, Sherry.
Got a break.
Got the break. We'll be back on the flip side, Sherry. Stay with us, please.
Don't believe a word.
Biden's budget proposal is out. I'm Peter Serafin with this week's Liberty Minute, brought to you by Liberty Lighthouse Wellness, my brand new Made in America supplement line. Find them in the shop at liberty-lighthouse.com. President Biden's budget suggests increasing the corporate tax rate from 21 to 28%, ensuring that, quote, large corporations pay their fair share, end quote. The administration estimates this would generate $1.326 trillion in revenue. Sure, increasing corporate tax might raise federal revenue. It also might cause corporations to fire employees to make up the difference. A 7% increase in corporate tax may also cause the cost of everything that you buy to go up by 7%. After all, an inconvenient truth is that only consumers pay taxes. Biden is also attempting to roll back part of the Trump tax cuts. And remember that promise, no tax increases for anyone earning less than $400,000? Well, we all knew it was a lie, but rolling back a cut is the same thing as an increase. Hopefully, the House of Representatives won't take the $6.8 trillion budget proposal seriously. Ah, crap. That means all of our hope lies in Kevin McCarthy's hands. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until next time, Cephas Pashem, Parabellum.
For the first time since its inception, RBN is offering a limited opportunity to you, the listener, to join our quest. You will be provided an effective platform on both internet and satellite broadcasting, and also gain the opportunity to both share your creativity with our producers and voice your message with thousands of patriots. Interested? Call 800-724-2719, extension 3, for details.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen plan to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
Yeah, free bird cannot change that bird. Freedom will always be freedom. So here we are. We got started, and we had Sherry in from Kansas. And Sherry, sorry about being interrupted by the break, but go ahead, young lady.
Hey, Neil, I've often heard people say that, you know, if someone's a member of the bar, they shouldn't be able to be a legislator or maybe even a president. Have you ever researched that?
No. No, I haven't heard that. Was that
I think that comes under, pardon me, but just for a second, I think that came under the original 13th Amendment, which suddenly disappeared after the War of 1812, which barred anyone with a title of nobility from serving in public office. Sorry about that, Sherry, but go ahead, you and Neil, go ahead.
Well, when people become a member of the bar, do they earn the title of Esquire? Isn't that the whole deal about Esquire is considered a title of nobility?
I think so. Yeah. I forget who I heard that from, but I heard that recently from somebody, I think on RBN. Maybe you, Mike.
Yes, you know, but our three negotiators for the Paris Peace Talks, John Jay, Benjamin Franklin, and John Adams, were all three listed as esquires, as negotiators for that treatment, for that treaty, I'm sorry. But then we have, you know, the original 13th Amendment, which was ratified. There's documentation out there. It was ratified. And then
yeah, somebody found it in the archives at the Sedgwick County Courthouse in Wichita.
Yeah, but it disappears. It disappeared off the public. But anyway, go ahead with your question, Sherry.
I remember hearing a story back when Jackson was president that he had some kind of dust-up with a, I assume it was a Supreme Court decision, but I don't remember the particulars, what it was about or anything. And he said something like, well, that's your opinion, but you try to enforce it.
Well, that was Andrew Jackson to Supreme Court Chief Justice John Marshall when he said that the Bank of the United States was, in fact, constitutional. And that's when President Andrew Jackson said, well, Mr. Chief Justice, that is your opinion. Let's see you enforce it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
Sherry. Oh, okay.
Sherry.
That's good to know. All right. That's all I had. Thanks, Mike.
That's beautiful. Well, that's absolutely beautiful. I didn't know he'd said that.
Yes, he very much made that statement. But it corresponds, you know, if we go back to Luther Martin and McCulloch v. Maryland over that issue, Neil, which we can you and I can talk about at another time. Let's try to get our callers in here. Daniel from Florida. Daniel, how are you?
Hello, can you hear me, Mike?
Yes, sir. Hear you well.
Oh, okay. Very good program. I'm enjoying it. I'm a little disturbed by it, but it goes along with everything that's gone wrong in all of my years of research. For one thing, America's got, or at least some years ago, America was said to have had 25% of the world's lawyers. No offense to your guests, but we have way too many lawyers, okay? Second of all, since when do I need a lawyer to go to court? The founding fathers understood natural law. I have a right to counsel. Counsel can be whoever I want to be in that courtroom, okay? So that's a gross misinterpretation of what that whole idea there was. Number two, it is the jury's job to judge both the law and the fact. That's just common sense. We, the people, have the power, and it's our power to judge both law and fact. That is in the jury instructions from the founding of this country. It's only been in recent years that it's just sort of disappeared, just like the 13th Amendment just sort of disappeared, very similar to the Apocrypha of the early Bibles disappearing about the time of the Civil War. Nobody knows who did it, but I have an 1850 Bible that my grandmother owned. It's sitting on my shelf right here. Protestant Bible from 1850 had the books of the Apocrypha in it. So the 13th Amendment disappeared probably by the same gremlins that saw to it that the Apocrypha books disappeared. The other thing that's wrong in this world, I'll just try to shorten this story, but shortly after the Oklahoma City bombing, I had a friend that lived in Oklahoma City. He was a naturopathic doctor there, and He had bought a cell phone when they first started coming out because he could afford one. The rest of us couldn't. And he called me up one day at his house, and we were talking on the phone. And his neighbor came across and started to accost him. And at one point, I was almost ready to hang up and call the authorities because the two of them got into an altercation that I thought was going to turn to violence. Well, it turns out the neighbor sued my friend for assault. And so I hear music.
Yeah, it's coming on up here. It's Balsam Range. We'll be back on the other side. Daniel, kind of hold on to that thought, and we'll get Neil's response.
Our tattered gray was torn between, and we should run a fight. But our southern pride swelled up inside as we dug in for the night. Then I heard a rider calling, and they're coming down the road. And the fiery flash of 20 pounds.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Don't become dependent on the medical system. Get and stay healthy naturally with Extendivite. Metals in the liver cause peroxides to get dumped into the bloodstream. Peroxides do more damage than free radicals to the arteries, and the LDL has no protection from peroxides, causing the LDL to get stuck in the arteries, creating a potential blockage. Extendivite slowly chelates the metals away from the liver so it can dispose of what was meant to be a harmless process, peroxide. Extendivite's seven herbs has a job to strengthen the organs and circulatory highway. Can you afford a heart attack? Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science, analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
You fought all the way, Johnny Reb, Johnny Reb. You fought all the way, Johnny Reb. Saw you a marching with Robert E. Lee. You held your head high, trying to win the victory.
There's probably no song other than Freebird that bothers me more to interrupt than Johnny Horton and his song Johnny Reb. But we've got business to take care of here, and we've got Daniel from Florida with some comments and some questions. So, Daniel, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'll just go ahead and finish this story. My friend that I was listening to on the phone, he just left his phone on while this was going on, so I was hearing the whole confrontation. So when the court appearance was going to happen, the trial, I drove all the way from Michigan to Oklahoma City to be a witness on his behalf. So I get there, and in the parking lot outside the courthouse is his lawyer, my friend and his wife, and my girlfriend and myself. So the lawyer wants to have a discussion with me before we go inside the courthouse. So I said, well, sure. Now, again, this is my friend's lawyer talking to me, not the enemy. So this guy comes up, he's like a 38 to 45 year old man, very clean cut, three-piece suit, obviously from a better section of Oklahoma City. And he comes up to me and he says, well, Daniel, when we go into the courtroom, I want you to understand something. I said, well, okay, go ahead. He says, in the courtroom, everybody lies. And I said, wait a minute, back the truck up here. Now, this guy called himself a born-again Christian. I said, would you repeat what you just told me? He said, well, yeah. He said, I just want you to know that when we get into the courtroom, everybody lies. I said, oh, so what you're telling me is it's okay for me to fabricate whatever I need so that you can win this case. I said, let me tell you something. This is my personal saying here. I said, number one, you're part of the problem with this country. And I said, number two, I don't lie for anybody. I'm not going to lie for you, my friend, or for anybody. I said, I'm going to go into this courtroom with my notes and tell the truth as I heard it that day. I said, whether you win or lose is of no consequence to me. I'm going to just testify. So we'll just forget that. But the whole time I was in there, I'm thinking to myself, this is okay. This guy talks to me in the parking lot before we goes in, and it's okay in the 1990s that everybody in the courtroom is going to lie? And then I'm giving my testimony in the courtroom, and it comes time for cross-examination, and this lawyer starts tearing apart everything I said and gets it asked backwards. And I looked over at the judge at one point, and I said, Your Honor, do I have to sit here and deal with this? I said, it's on the record what I said, and this guy is turning everything I said backwards. And the judge got a big grin on his face, and he told the lawyer to sit down or to stop doing that. He said, what Mr. Johns has said is right, and it's on the record. So the point I'm trying to get at is here, this country has gone upside down and is in trouble because we've violated all the biblical principles that we started out on. Number one, you don't lie. And number two, if you're in a position of trust, you're under a double standard. The scripture says so, and the founding fathers stated so many times. If you want to hold a public office or a position of trust, such as a man of God behind the pulpit, you're under a double obligation to be honest and tell the truth. And yet in this country, we don't hold anybody accountable for lying. I can't remember the last time anybody of any kind of a position of authority was ever held to account for lying and charged with perjury. We don't hold anybody accountable for anything in this country.
Well, very well said, Daniel, and I certainly appreciate it. Looks like we got some callers stacking up. Certainly appreciate your input there, Daniel. It was great. But if you would, one of my pet peeves is in the future, when you use the phrase founding fathers, tell me which one, because these people didn't get along at all, and there were even some of them who challenged each other to duels. There was actually a delegate to the Constitutional Convention who left to participate in a duel. So when you mention founding fathers, please don't group them all together because many of them didn't like each other at all.
Okay, I guess what I meant to say was, to me, the founding fathers are the people that occupied this land before it became a country.
Okay, a good definition. Well, thanks, Daniel. Let me jump ahead and let's get Fred from Michigan in here, and then we'll get some comments from Neil. Fred, go ahead, sir.
Okay. So your guest, Neil Roberts, right? Neil, you're a man after my own heart. Within the statutory code, there are legal remedy rights embedded. Okay, such as 28 United States Code 1746, which is a statute that provides and affords unsworn declarations under penalty of perjury the same weight as a sworn declaration, verification, etc. And 1746-1 identifies a declaration under penalties of perjury without the United States under the laws of the United States of America. 1746-2 cites within the United States under the laws of the United States. So the right to engage in one's own defense as one's own counsel or to utilize the counsel of another trusted person is afforded, it's etched in stone in Corpus Juris Secundum, Volume 7. So, and there are many other legal, there's a fellow, Neil, on YouTube, his name is Mark Emery, E-M-E-R-Y, Mark Emery, and perhaps his most supercritical, stellar presentation is by the title, Admiralty Black's Law Equals Fraud. Admiralty Black's Law Equals Fraud. And the subject matter of that stellar presentation is a status, standing, and agency. Status, standing, and agency. This guy is absolutely brilliant, eloquent, doesn't waste words. He's super, super schooled, super competent in all things statutory and common law. And again, it is Admiralty Black's Law Equals Fraud. There's another one by another person like him, goes by the title UCC Connection Legal Tyranny, Free Yourself. UCC Legal Connection, UCC Connection Legal Tyranny, Free Yourself. And so rather than take up any more time, Neil, I'm going to give out my phone number to you, the previous caller, Daniel. There's a guy by the name of Dave in Michigan with whom I still need to connect. I'm now dedicating myself to re-engage in all this. And also well, on the subject matter of American National, et cetera. So here comes my number, 810-282-1400. 810-282, like February 82, 1400, 00 buckshot. 810-282-1400 buckshot. Anybody that wants to engage this subject matter with me is highly encouraged to do so.
Well, Fred, thank you so much, but are you aware that 28 USC also provides sovereign immunity from the federal government?
No, sir, I'm not aware of that. But
well, you might want to look at it.
Yeah, this is need to know for sure, brother. It's need to know intel. Okay.
All right. Well, thanks, Fred. Let me before we let's get any comments that our guest Neil might have at this point, and then we'll jump over to Terry in Colorado. Neil, any thoughts, sir?
Well, I had a couple. Sovereign immunity, it exists only to the extent that the person asserting the immunity has jurisdiction for the actions that they're taking. The immunity extends to errors, indecisions, bad faith, everything under their jurisdiction. So the trick is when you want to get at when you want to breach the sovereign immunity, you got to circumvent their jurisdiction, and you've got to identify where they have usurped their jurisdiction. They are now outside of their jurisdiction. At that point, they are no longer protected by that force field.
But Neil,
sovereign immunity.
Yes. But Neil, that 28 USC stipulates that the federal government can only be sued if it agrees to the suit. So how can you get legal recourse if you can't sue the boogers?
You're not suing them.
Well, how else could you get remedy?
If you're suing somebody who's outside of the government, they don't have jurisdiction. It's not the government you're suing.
Okay.
You're suing an individual.
Well,
at that point.
Well, but the government says that it cannot be sued without its consent. Scalia pointed that out in the case of secession. He said if the state brought a lawsuit for secession, that the federal government does not have to listen to it unless they decide they want to, which means that they just say, okay, you can't sue us because we didn't approve it. That was my point. Let's try it. We've got some callers here backing up. Let's see if we can get Terry. I think I know this gentleman from Colorado. Terry, your thoughts, sir?
Hello, Mike.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be on here, and I'm glad to be acquainted with Neil. He's in a tough spot today on the show, I believe. Regarding the case where the jurors are not supposed to judge the law, but only the facts of the case, I just wanted to bring up the fact, as does the Fully Informed Jury Association and Roger Roots and many others who preach the fact that the jury does, in fact, have the right. I'm reminded of Samuel Chase, the Supreme Court justice of back around 1800, who was impeached. He was, I believe, he was the first Supreme Court justice to be impeached. And one of the reasons that was stated for his impeachment was that he had changed his mind. He had been preaching for years that the jurors do have the right to judge the law, but he then gave an instruction to a Supreme Court jury, because they used juries back then. He told that jury in the instructions that they were not to judge the law, but only the facts of the case, and that was one of the reasons he was cited to be impeached.
Well, Terry, let's not forget also that Samuel Chase was the one in the sedition trial of Mr. Patterson, who he is the one who told the jury that it didn't make any difference whether Patterson told the truth or not. The fact was that he was to be judged if he spoke against the government. Even if he spoke the truth against the government, he committed a crime. And then, of course, you know, we know who represented Samuel Chase in his impeachment trial, and that would have been none other than Luther Maughton.
Did he win?
Right, but it's become this norm to give instructions that the jury's not to judge the law, and in fact, one of the primary purposes of the balance of the system of using a jury is just that, in order to nullify bad law.
Exactly, and that is, if the people made any difference, Terry, you would be spot on, because it should be left to a jury to say either that or the people have no voice. For the people on a jury to say, yes, the defendant is guilty of what you charged him with, but the problem is your law is unconstitutional, so we rule he is not guilty.
Thanks for letting me get my comments in, gentlemen.
Oh, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Neil, you have any comments before we jump to Tom in Utah?
Well, I forget who I heard talking about this very recently, and they said it wasn't even, the jury could overrule not just based on whether the Constitution was, whether the law was unconstitutional, but just whether in a criminal trial, he's not guilty, period. I don't care what your law says, he is not guilty. And that's my understanding, that is in the Constitution somewhere. I'm not a jury expert. I'm not a trial lawyer per se. I'm more of a, motion arguing.
Administrative law. You do it so well.
No, it's just I do anything, but it's more motions and arguments. I don't want to go to trial. Trials take up a lot of time, and I'm a solo. So I'm not an expert on it, but I heard somebody speak recently. What do you think, Mike? Jury can overrule regardless. I mean, under the Constitution.
Well, if it's a government of we the people, they should be able to overrule anything. Let's not forget that Luther Maughton, in his original supremacy clause that he wrote before it was changed by the Committee of Style and Arrangement, Luther Maughton stipulated that all Supreme Court cases would have a jury of we the people. The Supreme Court would hear the case, they would talk about it, and then the jury would rule upon it. Of course, you know, Gouverneur Morris obliterated that. But let's see if we can get these other folks in before we run out of time here, Neil.
Sure.
How about Tom? Tom in Utah. Tom, how are you?
Hi. In 2008, a family brought me their infant or young child that was near death. Contrary to my fellows in pediatrics, I identified the true cause, and in the process, I identified a poisoning risk that is, being experienced by a tenth of the population of the United States. I actually contacted Jerry Spence, a very famous lawyer out in Wyoming.
Oh, yes.
When he saw my evidence and the facts of the case, he said, "Tom, there's no point in us trying to take this case on because the government has so many lawyers and so much power that they'll suppress or squash all of this." And I actually went to D.C. 3 years in a row, 2 months every year, and still the federal government is not, appreciated the work. So I also found out that the whole judiciary system has been, looking for the right word, they've been a victim that they're not to allow not guilty pleas. They're supposed to go for a plea in abeyance or a no contest.
Well, very well said, Tom, and thank you for the call in there. I certainly appreciate that.
Go to gasingamerica.com or tominutah.us, and it will take you to that case. A tenth of the population are being injured even right now, and they not provided remedy.
Thank you, Tom. I will
thank
check
you,
that. I want to take a look at that. Let's see if we can. We've got some callers here, and we're rapidly running out of time. James in Vancouver, your comment, please, sir.
Good afternoon. I missed your guest's name.
Neil Roberts.
And, sir, do you practice law? Am I correct?
Do I practice law?
Have you been called to the bar, sir? That's my question.
I've been called to the bar, yes.
And where?
Yes, in Boston, in Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. Okay, no further questions, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right, James. Let's go to Rick in Pennsylvania. Rick? Rick, are you with us?
I'd just like to hear how you guys mix, music. Songs are a good rallying point for good lawyers like Jerry Spence. He's the guy that successfully defended that fellow in Idaho, I believe.
Weaver.
At any rate, you were talking of a Johnny Horton song you weren't real pleased with, but I wonder if you know a band called Brother Phelps does a song called Lookout Mountain, a great rallying point for those who want to be free and are willing to fight for it.
Well, Rick, you got that wrong. I am not displeased with Johnny Horton and Johnny Reb. That is one of my favorite songs ever. So the thing that displeased me is I need to talk with folks like you and folks like Neil, so I have to interrupt those songs and not let them play their entirety. That was my distress.
Hello. And Skinner.
Well, Skinner is fantastic as well, too. Rick, I'm sorry, do you have more comments, sir? Doesn't appear to be so. Dave in Nevada. Dave, what do you got, buddy?
So can you? First of all, I wanted to say that I believe that your guest is correct about the jury being able to throw out a case. They don't have to actually know the law. They can just find something odd or displeasing about the case, and they can, as a jury, say there's something wrong with this case. That's all they have to say.
Well, thanks for that, Dave, but the problem is the prosecutors have a right to call that case again and again and again until they get the decision they want.
I understand that. I totally understand, because they can just restart the case. But I'm just saying that's just the point of knowledge.
Very much appreciate that. Let me give my guest Neil here a chance to summarize our discussion, if you would, starting with, is the Constitution a legal document? And Neil, if you will finish out, sir, until we get to the music, it would be most appreciated.
No, my pleasure. We didn't hit on it a bunch today, which is the Constitution or no authority, which is my position is we had the Articles of Confederation. That was the law of the land. It had certain terms and conditions about its governance and about how it would be administered at the time. And it was agreed to by the 13 states. It was a law of the land. It was a contract. And, you know, the people in power, they didn't like it. And I see the same thing going on today, like in the court system and the government. The people in power at that time, they didn't like it, and they forced through whatever changes that they, you know, were able to accomplish surreptitiously for themselves. Now, they wouldn't have been able to do that today because of communications and Apple iPhones and things like that. People will figure out what they're up to. And back in the day, they could get away with it. But, you know, today they do it differently. Today they do it in the courts. Today they do it the governments, the voting machines, whatever it is. This is the power that they have. It's no different. But my position is, whatever they're doing today, there's really, you know, a good sharp lawyer gets in there and there's no statute of limitations, and just make an argument. This Constitution is void, null and void. Declare it, because I mean, I could make the legal argument. It's the whole thing was an entire fraud on the court. I forget who brought up that point, but that's my position. The Constitution is a fraud on the court. The ratification. Everything. There you go.
Oh, very much so. Well, Neil, I can't thank you enough, sir, for coming on. I hope that you will come on with me again. I love these conversations. And, you know, I love your and mine one-on-one conversations on these subjects. But I really want people to be able to hear your position. So the music is coming up here with Merle. Thanks again, folks. Support RBN. And don't forget, next week, Travelers Rest South Carolina from Republic Broadcasting. It will be a Dixie Fest. Hope you will all tune in. There will be several shows on RBN from that location. God bless everyone. Have a wonderful week. Ooh, Dwight Yoakam.
They drew a dying breath.
Thank you, RBN.
Get my chest, please, Lord. Take a soul back home to Dixie. I sang Dixie as he died. People just walked on by as I cried. Battle had robbed him of all his rebel pride. So I sang Dixie as he died.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available, and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To read more about this amazing breakthrough and to order your terahertz frequency wand, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.